The accident. How did I get here? I thought to myself. The recent events that landed me here on the side of a mountain, 50 feet below the winding highway above, were quite obvious. Just hours ago, I left my hometown of Chico, California on my Kawasaki 750. It was a beautiful afternoon for a ride. Bluebird skies, scents of dried grass filled my nostrils. The arid June heat softened by the wind blowing across my leather-covered body. Easy Rider's soundtrack boomed through my quadraphonic stereo headset. I was on the way to Salmon Falls, Idaho, for a whitewater kayaking trip with my Boy Scout troop. It was an event I had been looking forward to for months. Since I was the owner of Best Way Interiors, an interior design company, I didn't have the flexibility to take 3 weeks off for the entire Western States camping tour they had planned. So, I was just going to meet up with them for the kayaking portion of the trip and return home. Plus, I wanted to do something adventurous for myself. The 80-hour work weeks lately were a grind. I just wanted a break. A man's trip. Something different than the conference-driven business functions or the weekend getaways with family squeezed between big projects. This was also a time to celebrate a fresh start into the fifth decade of my life. As I drove, the rice fields and almond orchards of the valley floor morphed into ribbony turns lined with evergreens. Pine trees stretched as far as the eye could see. Huge granite boulders punctuated the hillsides. The Feather River thundered alongside me as I meandered uphill into the Sierra Nevadas. It was just me and the open road in a harmonious dance. At least for a while. Soon, my sweet tempo of 60 miles per hour was cut in half, thanks to a 1970s motorhome that rivaled the rig in Chevy Chase's Christmas Vacation. I didn't mind, though. I was in no hurry to pass. Then came a surprise. I hit an outside corner covered with shale from a recent rock slide. Oh shit, I thought. I couldn't hit my brakes in time, given my limited vision. My bike and I went sliding 20 feet over the debris, straight into the guardrail. I initially tried to jump over the barrier. I thought my landing would be okay, given the moderate slope of the canyon thus far. I was wrong. This portion of the road was nestled against a vertical drop. When I hit the post, it tore my right knee open and apart and broke the leg in such a way that it could swing up behind my head like the most graceful of yogis. My body bounded down the rough terrain. A stick punctured my stomach. My right femur was shattered. Both hips were broken, as well as all of my ribs, my left shoulder, and right ankle. Later, I learned that they stopped counting when the number of broken bones surpassed 100. My sunglasses split apart and cut my face. My helmet cracked in 3 places, yet, amazingly, stayed in place. I found myself in a very bent, broken position when my body finally came to a halt. Everything went black. At this point in the story, you might be wondering if this big, yuppie motorcycle was a spontaneous purchase to appease a midlife crisis. That couldn't be further from the truth. The thrill of moving fast on bikes had been with me since the age of 11. That's when my dad bought a fire engine red pack jack for hunting. This gas-powered bike had 2 wide tires on the back, set single file, and 1 narrower tire up front. The long seat, similar to the banana style of a cruiser bicycle, held my younger brother and me perfectly as we etched our tracks in the grass behind the house. Life got even better when Dad bought a 2nd pack jack that was lighter in weight. Now Stan and I could race. The course we crafted started on the far side of the yard, behind the above-ground pool, which is about 25 feet in diameter. Once the obstacles had been navigated there, we'd shoot down the north side of the fence, weaving through the evenly spaced rows of cedars. Another turn brought us back across the flat part of the lawn, where we could really gain speed and goose it down an 8-foot slope. You might think that track alone would have been sufficient entertainment on long summer days, but it wasn't. We concocted the idea to cut a hole in the fence and make a 2nd section in the field behind our house. Those dirt mounds could perfect our jumping skills. So, we got into Dad's tool shed, found some saws, and got to work. Making our way through the fence itself was easy. so was pruning the small branches of the hedge. The difficult work came in removing the thicker limbs of this pyracantha. Thankfully, Mom and Dad worked all day, and since Stan and I were in charge of the landscaping chores of raking and mowing anyway, our project went largely unnoticed. The end result was a huge figure-eight raceway with the aforementioned loop in the backyard and a mogul-laden loop across the alley. We were in heaven. We'd go through 5 gallons of gas a day and spend hours improving our lap times. Then we'd laugh hysterically when a collision was narrowly averted through the archway in the fence. Our goal was to go faster, jump higher, be better than our friends. We made it through most of the summer before a neighbor complained about the incessant engine noise out back. That's when our use of the field was revoked. It didn't matter, though. The love of bikes had been deeply woven into my psyche. 3 years later, I got my hands on a Honda 50 for the more respectable task of delivering newspapers before and after school. Once I entered college, I bought a Honda 300 Scrambler. This made for a speedy 90-mile commute back to my hometown on weekends. It also made parking on campus a breeze. That bike was kept a secret for at least 2 semesters until I rolled into my parents' front yard, popped a wheelie, and announced to my mom that I was getting married to a girl I hadn't even introduced them to yet, no less. That went over like an audible fart in church. Regardless of the reaction and my short-lived nuptials, the Honda 300 was soon replaced with a Honda 450. Just after graduation, I upgraded yet again to a BMW 650. This could have been a result of the insults hurled by my neighbor, telling me that I needed to get off the Honda. "You're an embarrassment to real motorcycle riders," Ozzy would tease me. Maybe it was the sheer luck of having that very same bearded friend sell me his mint-condition beauty for the right price. By the time I hit my late 20s, though, building a career and a family became my priority. That was until I turned 38 and bought the bike I had just been ejected from moments ago off of Highway 70. This bike trip was definitely different than any I had taken before. I had 1 week's worth of clothing and camping gear loaded in my saddlebags. My weight was more than usual, which changed my center of gravity just enough to diminish my sense of control going around turns. So, despite my usual ability to turn on a dime with this screaming Kawasaki, it didn't prevent me from going over the cliff today. When my consciousness returned, I realized I was badly hurt. I also knew this mountainous region well. In fact, I hiked it the year prior with the same Troop 31 I was set to meet in Idaho in just a few days' time. Missing my scouts was now the least of my concerns. I was hot and sticky, not just from the late afternoon sun scorching my body or from the blazing rocks beneath me. It was due to the copious amounts of fresh blood spewing from my wounds. This was bound to attract coyotes. Fear set in rapidly. What would happen if those animals found me before I took my last breath? The worst-case scenarios raced through my mind. I couldn't move, much less defend myself against predators. So, what could I do? How could I get help? Could I yell loudly enough for those passing by in their vehicles above to hear me? Given my body was so weak, that was going to be an unrealized pipe dream. Other worrisome thoughts filled my head. What was going to happen to my family? I knew my wife, Paula, and I owed a lot of money on our house. Who was going to run our business? How was she going to survive? Would she be able to, or even want to, care for my sons from my previous marriage? What was going to happen to my scout troop? Who would take my place on the Rotary Council? What about my parents? The pain in my body was so great that I was going numb all over, and my extreme discomfort didn't allow any single thought to linger. There was nothing I could do, so I started to pray. Tears streamed down my face. I felt unworthy to even ask God to save me. In an attempt to prove I really was, I began retracing the Beatitudes. Had I been humble? Well, that's all a matter of perspective. I certainly did my best to live within my means and work hard and serve my community. Had I helped those in mourning? At least I could answer this with confidence. I dedicated many years as a chaplain, and I visited dozens on their deathbed. Had I fed the hungry? Of course. This was part of our church ritual, and our family was highly engaged in our congregation. Had I shown mercy to others? Had I been a peacekeeper? Had my heart been pure in my family, my business, and my relationship with God? Was I good enough to be received into heaven? The truth was, I had absolutely no idea if I was worthy to be saved. I could only call out to God for help. Minutes passed like hours. I knew there was no chance I was going to make it on my own. Any sense of control over my life ceased. I had done my best and was now ready to let go. That's the moment everything began to change. As the bright light of the sun began to dip down below the peaks to the west, a fire crew happened to be traveling up the canyon on the way to fight a forest fire. The truck was heavily equipped with medical supplies, too. One of the firefighters saw the sunlight reflect off my helmet as they traversed the same road I had just taken hours ago. Then they came across my bike up against the guardrail. The position of it seemed odd, and they thought to pull over to check for an accident. The few cars that passed me up earlier that day probably thought I was down at the river fishing for the afternoon. More likely, they were focused on avoiding the shale on the asphalt that caused my accident in the first place. But the firemen stopped, and when looking down the canyon, they could see my body. Time seemed to speed up now. They called down to me, but I couldn't muster enough strength to respond. Down the hill they came, with ropes and a stretcher. Only the real life-saving equipment turned out to be their radio, which allowed them to call the Quincy Firehouse and order a helicopter rescue. They also found my wallet and discovered that my blood type was A positive and ordered the helicopter to bring blood, not just plasma, to the scene. An immediate transfusion was necessary. According to the doctors who treated me at the hospital, this one simple step probably saved my life. Upon the fireman's arrival, my pulse was quickly on a trajectory to drop below double digits. The crew up on the road stopped traffic to make room for the helicopter to land. Down below, firefighters were doing everything they could to save me. All of a sudden, I lifted up and out of my body, and then found myself sitting on a round, steady rock 20 feet away, watching the scene from an entirely new perspective. There was a lady holding an emergency blanket to protect my body from the sunlight. Men were on my right and left, working fiercely to revive me. In that instant, I was presented with the choice to come back or not. This wasn't a baritone voice of God posing such a question. It was more like a soft inquiry from a best friend. The peacefulness of this state was amazing. I didn't feel any pain or discomfort. There was an all-encompassing sense that harmony was the fabric of the universe. Well-being abounded here. I felt connected to the most powerful force of love I had ever encountered, and my belonging in it was more natural than breathing. From this serenity, I had absolute free will to return back to my human form or not. There was no rush to make this decision either. No sense of right or wrong. No judgment. Just two options placed in front of me. The obvious answer seemed to be to stay put, even though I didn't really know where that was. I just knew the warm, benevolent energy around me was intoxicating. Then, my life started playing like a fast-forward movie. Everything that I had done, all of my hopes and aspirations, were revealed in an orderly fashion. Like a dream, I saw a huge book with the events of my life written out before my eyes. I could recognize my own handwriting, but there were things that were left out of this text or seemed to be missing. Some sentences were incomplete. The text was even written in different colors. When I looked closer, those were the times when I was not on my path. These were the experiences when negative emotions kept me out of my natural alignment. It's when anger or resentment or blame pinched me off from receiving the unconditional love I felt now. Then there were blank spots where nothing filled the void. Those gaps surrounded the situations when I felt guilty about my words or actions. I interpreted the space as an opportunity for me to revisit ways I could have approached the situations differently from this broader vantage point. Had I learned anything from these experiences? While this truth serum flowed through my consciousness, linear time stood still. What the clock would have measured in nanoseconds allowed me to perceive my entire life without rushing. It suddenly became clear to me. If I wanted to right these wrongs, I had to come back. The moment that thought came to me, I was back in my body again. The crystal blue eyes of the fireman looking down at me were like those of an angel. "Who was the first president of the United States, Mr. Thompson?" he asked. "George Washington," I replied, barely audible. Clearly, I was coming out of shock. Earthly smells flooded my senses again. Metallic blood, astringent alcohol, citrusy pine, salty perspiration, hot leather, chalky dirt. The helicopter blades thundered in the canyon as they made their landing. I was so broken up, and the stretcher was so large, that I wouldn't fit inside the helicopter. This meant I was placed in a special basket and hung outside of the cabin until we made it back down to the valley's emergency trauma room. Lying on the side of the mountain, I couldn't predict that miracle rescue. Nor could I imagine the details of the recovery process that would follow. I had no idea that it would take 28 reconstructive surgeries to piece me back together. I couldn't fathom month-long stints in the hospital at a time. There was no way to forecast 3 full years in a hospital bed, and 3 more just to relearn how to walk. A complete career change and new life trajectory was definitely unforeseeable. Yet something shifted in me when I left my body that day. I felt connected to a power far greater than bones or flesh. I sensed my eternal spirit. Perhaps for the first time, the loving nature I believed to be God alchemized from an intellectual concept into an internal knowing. That sense of acceptance was completely eye-opening for me. It allowed me to revisit my past with compassion. I could forgive the abuse by my father and the smothering by my mother. I was able to appreciate the moral compass I used to navigate past decisions and the grit I had in overcoming innumerable challenges. My ferocious work ethic, which might have contributed to this motorcycle crash in the first place, could simultaneously be the fuel to help me bounce back from this mess and start over. Only my choice to live again signified more than a return to good health. My time spent in the non-physical was like being plugged into a supercharger of well-being, and now I wanted that pure positive energy to infuse every element of my life. That meant I needed to learn how to heal. This required a new framework of knowledge, one that extended beyond the degrees I held in psychology and sociology to do so. I didn't have answers about how to do this just yet. That was okay by me. My interaction with the divine gave me the confidence I could figure it out. It also gifted me with more serenity, wisdom, and intuition to be utilized with this second chance at life. That was no accident. All I had to do was surrender to the love I knew to be there for me and discover if I could bring it into each moment on Earth for a more satisfying and joyful human experience.